He was born a prince in India in 599 BC. At the age of 30, he left his family and royal household and became a monk. Sounds like the story of Buddha, but this prince is named Mahavira. And the religion he preached for 30 years as he traveled around India is Jainism. Though some 6 million people, including some of India's richest business families, follow Jainism, few know much about it. Why do some Jains wear a cotton cloth over their mouth? Who was Mahavira? Who are the Tirthankaras? Sunil Vora, public relations coordinator for the Jain Center of Northern California, and Harendra Shah, chairman of the Jain Center of Northern California Education Committee, talks about a thriving Jain community in the heart of the Bay Area with the Jain Temple of Milpitas. Now, Harendra Shah, Jainism was born in India sort of, as I mentioned, under similar circumstances as Buddhism, at least that's what people think. In fact, Mahavira was a contemporary of the Buddha. So was it an offshoot of Hinduism or a reaction to Hinduism?
Mahavira and Buddha were contemporaries, as well as there has been some preconceived idea that Jainism is an offshoot of Hinduism. In reality, Jainism is nothing but the laws of the nature. It has always existed. There has been several historical proof. Like in Indus Valley, they found some artifacts.
This is the Indus Valley civilization of Mohenjo-Daro Harappa.
Right, Mohenjo-Daro Harappa. They have found some artifacts which has the nude images and also some yogic postures, like meditation postures, standing postures. We call it kaushabs. They all echo Jainism. Now historians have agreed that Jainism existed much before Mahavir's time. And you know, Indus Valley was discovered about or represents the time 3000 to 3500 years BC. Also we have caves in India which has some images, paintings which are found to be 10,000 years BC old. Also, you know, we have so much recorded history, and also there is a prehistorical time. The recorded history takes us back to as much as 10,000 BC, much before the Mahavir's time. And also, as we explained, you know, Jainism means it derived from the word jinn. Jinn means is the victor, the person who is victorious over the attachment and aversion. Also shows the path of the how to get rid of the attachment and aversion is called jinn. And
so Mahavira, as you mentioned, the religion Jainism existed long before Mahavira, unlike Buddhism and Gautam Buddha. So in that case, what was Mahavira's role in Jainism? Why is he so, you know, synonymous in many ways to many people with Jainism?
Yeah, the Mahavir, you know, he expounded and reformed the Jainism. You know, there are time in the history, you have the one philosophy goes on and then it goes through the valley. And Mahavir, you know, revived the Jainism. Idea of Jainism is that without compromising any fundamentals of the Jainism, what Mahavir did is that to suit that current time, at, you know, the time at that time, the people, the understanding, the circumstances, he readjusted the philosophy of Jainism without compromising the fundamentals of Jainism.
So in the philosophy, I've heard that there are three main principles, guiding principles, if we had to enumerate them in Jainism, about non-violence, non-attachment to material possessions, and looking at truth in multiple ways. So do you want to tell me a little bit about, you know, what's kind of the essence of that?
Yeah, like Hinduism, you know, we also emphasize heavily on non-violence. The laws of non-violence or the rules of the non-violence supersedes all other rules. In Jainism, the non-violence is explained in a great subtle ways. It's not talking about the stopping the violence at the physical level. Also, it talks about stopping the violence at the speech level as well as the mental level. So what we believe is that non-violence must stop at, from the root of it, which is thinking. If you have some violent idea at thinking level, it will pass on to the or move on to the speech and then into the physical action.
So it's not just you're non-violent in action, that's not enough. What about the multiplicity?
And so what we say is that one of the root of the non-violence is the possessiveness, we call parigraha. So aparigraha means the non-possessiveness, is one of the fundamentals of the Jainism, which stops the physical violence. But to stop the violence of the speech and the thinking, Jainism has a unique philosophy introduced, which is unlike any other religion or any other world philosophy. We call anekantvad, which is called multiplicity of the views, non-absolutism. What it means is that that a truth cannot be verbally or in writing be expressed completely. Truth can be expressed only relatively. And, you know, to express that one absolute truth, it may require thousands and thousands of partial truths. The idea of this philosophy is that when you say that I'm wearing a black jacket, and then somebody else says, no, it is made in China. Somebody might say, no, you got it from the Messi. All three constitutes the part of the same truth. And you can go on and on this.
Mm-hmm.
So idea is to view other people's ideas with equanimity and without like or dislike of the content he's presenting. And then you evaluate based on the truth basis. And you will, if everybody does that, your violence from the thinking, the root of the thinking stops. And so we believe that anekantvada is really the most important part of the ahimsa practice, which is non-violence practice.
So how does that then affect now, if truth becomes relative, so even something somebody said 2,000 years ago could be changed now because you're looking at things in a different way, but still be equally valid. In that sense, how does that affect the way Jains look at life? If there's no, this absolute guiding thing, that there's no this clear sense of this has always been right, and there's no other way of looking at this.
I think, like we mentioned, that the truth cannot be expressed completely verbally or in writing. I think the way we look at today, if we are talking about the 1,000 years back, we will be talking about the cart and the cows and buffaloes and the primitive way of doing it. So in our talk, when we try to say the truth, we'll be using all the situational things in our talk. Today when we talk, we'll be talking computers, internet. But however, when we talk about the everlasting happiness, it would remain same. But the content, situation, the time, the area do change. But however, the truth that do not change, does not change.
Now there is a Jain temple in Milpitas, right in the Bay Area. Sunil Vora, what was the impetus that led to the establishment of this temple? Why did you feel it was needed? I believe it was started fairly recently.
Yeah, actually the Jain center started about 20 years ago. And at the time, there were only a few families, and they used to meet at someone's house. Eventually, they expanded, and they used to meet at the Hindu temple in Fremont. And then the community grew bigger and bigger to the point where whenever we had major festivals or meetings or prayer ceremonies, there just wasn't enough room. So about 8 years ago, we started the whole idea about building a temple, or actually building a community center and a temple so that we could hold meetings, prayer ceremonies, and other occasions where you could celebrate being together. And the process took time in terms of looking for land and then construction permits, design. Eventually, last August, August of 2000, the temple was completed and inaugurated, and we call it a Pratishtha ceremony. And basically what happened at the time was we had 4 days of ceremonies, and it's been about a year and a half since the temple was inaugurated.
So what would somebody going to the Jain temple here expect to see? What would they find when they went in?
At the temple, what we have is we've got two levels. One is a community hall, which is downstairs. It's a two-level building. And upstairs is a Jain temple that is similar to ones you would find in India. there are deities or idols. There is a main idol, what we call Mulnayak, which is actually the first Tirthankar. Mahavir, by the way, is the 24th Tirthankar.
The Tirthankar meaning?
Tirthankar means an omniscient person who has attained complete knowledge and in a sense has attained nirvana. So in Jainism, we recognize 24 Tirthankars. There are quite a few other people who would have attained nirvana also, but these are the 24 that we have recognized. The first one was Adinath, and his idol is in the temple, along with the idols of all 24 in a sort of circular or behind the main idol. And essentially, it's a quiet place where people can go worship.
What are like the main Jain festivals that are celebrated at the temple?
There are quite a few. The most important one is there's a series of it's actually 8 days and 10 days.
Yeah, this is Arendra. Yeah. There are 8 days of Paryushan and 10 days of the Dashalakshana. So we have total 18 days of the festivals.
Okay.
And this is the major festival of Jains. In addition to that, we have Mahavir Janma Kalyanak. Then we have
birth anniversary,
and also at Diwali time, you know, the Hindus, for the meaning of the Diwali for Hindus is different, because when Ram came back victorious from over the Ravan to the Ayodhya, and they celebrated. In our case, it's the Mahavir Nirvan Day.
Okay.
So these are the three major
day Mahavir attained Nirvan.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
These are the three major festivals, and there are many that. And our purpose of festival is not to increase the material attachment, but to decrease the material attachment, and that's the philosophy on all those things. Like, for example, the Paryushan and thus Lakshana, the meaning of Paryushan is to stay closer to your soul. So those 8 days, you know, we try to stay away from our business and material life, try to spend our time more spiritually, you know, practicing some austerities, reading some spiritual books, listening to the spiritual discourses, and you know, try to purify our soul as much as possible.
Since you brought up the subject of material attachment, I was going to ask you, like, some of the richest business families in India are Jains, like diamond merchants and people in Gujarat. So how does that tie in with the lack of material attachment?
Yeah, this is a very good question, because there was one time 60 to 70% of the financial transactions were going through Jains. And Jains happened to be only 0.5% of the
Indian population.
Total Indian population. See, what Jains, you know, all Jains, they try to, you know, we have the rules for the householders. And they, one of the things they teach them is to minimize the violence. So in that process, they have certain businesses, they preach them to stay away from them. Like, you know, the forestry or animal ingredient-oriented businesses, fire, digging, you know, those kind of, there are many kinds of business.
Because
like,
those could destroy.
Those are the one, yeah. They destroy the living beings, or they change the ecological formation of the world, etc. So in that process, what happened is that the business they were left with, so, you know, supposed to do, which involves the minimum of violence, happens to be mostly trade type of business. And trade type business, as a byproduct of practicing nonviolence, that turn out to be very what you call a prosperous business, and that turn out to be rich people. But most important thing about this rich history says that Jains not only concentrated only for that community, these rich people, they have also, we have history, they have helped the kings, they have helped build the Hindu temples, they have helped build even the mosques, and we have a history of it. You know, Jains have been very influential. That Chandragupta Maurya, which is the grandfather of the Ashoka,
right?
He was Jain himself.
So is this religion that you find, Sunil Bora, is this, now that you have a temple, do you find that as a religion, is this more about worship in temples, or is this a personal religion, you know, kind of the home religion?
I think it's both. Actually, I would say it's an extremely personal religion, but it also helps to get together to sort of accentuate and share ideas. And you know, this temple serves the purposes of worshiping as well as social gatherings. You know, we encourage Jains to get together. Another important purpose that it serves is teaching our youth. we actually, after the temple got built, we now have a very successful Jain version of Sunday school. We call it Parshala. And every other Sunday or twice a month, we have kids from the age of like 5 to up through high school. And there's about 300 kids who get together, and we formalize the whole education process.
And they don't resent the fact that they
you know, it's funny. They actually look forward to the school. Because, again, you know, they meet their friends, their peers, and, again, the teaching is how it's presented, and they love it.
So with the families that come here, do you notice, like, in terms of age groups and stuff, is it mostly older people who come, like parents of software engineers, or is it the software engineers themselves?
No, actually, most of, you know, I guess the congregation, so to speak, consists of young people. And when I say young, basically from like mid-20s to mid-50s, with the vast majority being in their late 30s, mid-40s. Most of the people are, you know, working in the Silicon Valley, obviously. There's and quite a few of the scene, you know, some of these people's parents also come. But the vast majority, including, you know, I guess Harendra and I, we are all basically, I would like to say, relatively young.
Yeah, one thing I might add is that, you know, the best way to pass our rich heritage of Jainism is to have bhavan and have the education program. And we try to make, like Sunil said, you know, we try to make this Parshala program or Jain school program as a family event. So we go from the toddler to the high school or whatever, even college, we haven't started yet. But at the same time, the parents, they get together and they sit down in the adult class. So it's like this, people of all ages get education of Jainism.
Religion, like here in the fast-paced lifestyle, often I find myself not remembering when different festivals that are particular to me actually happen because I'm not in touch with it on a day-to-day basis. So do you find it hard to keep the concept of faith alive in an immigrant community here, you know, or is it, do you think about faith only in terms of when, you know, something like a birth or a death happens, or how is it in your day-to-day life?
Yeah, I think maybe I bring, maybe this is the right time to bring a few fundamentals here. You know, Jainism is based on three things. You know, must appeal to common sense. Anything we talk about the faith or the philosophy must have the reason behind it. And it must involve the self-efforts and self-initiatives. So in personal life or your professional life, what you do the same three things. So this attracts a lot of Jains to come back and, you know, and create strengthen their faith. Another thing is that we don't believe in caste or color or sex, anything. Everybody, every living being is capable of attaining, you know, this moksha, or we call it the omnipotence, you know. And I think there are several things happening. Also the community, getting to know your own type of people, understanding the Jainism, and developing not only the social fabric and community fabric, but also our cultural fabric as well as philosophical fabrics, you know, to keep them intact. And I think everybody has inside that feeling, and that's why if you come to Sunday school, you will see a tremendous amount of synergy, you know, and very pleasant sight.
With the Jain temple that's there right now, Jain has different sects, I believe, like Shvetambara, who wear white, and Digambara, the so-called sky clothes. But when you have a Jain temple, does it differentiate between these sects, or is everybody welcome at that temple?
What we like to call, Sandeep, is that since Mahavir reformed the Jainism 2600 years ago or so, since then we have some divisions. But here we try to reverse the flow. Our youth will not understand why we are Shvetambara or why we are Digambara. So what we try to say, we like to be known as a Jain without any prefix of Shvetambara or Digambara. So all the activities we do, we try to develop a balance between all these things. One thing I should point out, even we have some, you know, traditions like Shvetambara and Digambara. When it comes to the fundamentals of Jainism, the theory of the soul or the philosophy of the karma, they are identical. The real differences are the who was born when, what type of the things, ritualism, that's where the differences are. So in this temple, we don't want to change people at the same time. So we allow everybody to practice the Jainism the way they are used to practice. So we have accommodated in our temple. We have the Digambara images, as well as Svetamrad images, as well as we have the Sthanak. We also have the community or tradition do not believe in worshipping the image. So we have the Sthanak, or the, we call the hall of the, you know, dwelling, you know, which where they can do their own things without
what
images.
What does that look like?
Oh, it's a room like
it's just a space.
Room, yeah, there is no image in there. You know, so that's where they basically concentrate on their soul. See, our philosophy is very simple. Anything we do to suppress our passions, like anger, ego, deceit, and the greed. Whatever the form or the medium you use, whether it's a worship or the or non-worshipping form, you know, it could be internal, it could be external. The whole idea is to how to decrease this all passions, you know, anger, etc. And as long as people attain that thing, and that's the really root of the happiness. And once we, as much as we suppress these four passions, the more happier we will be. And if we eliminate all these four, we call it everlasting happiness. And that's our definition of the moksha. And that's what we are telling everybody to, our Mahavir told everybody to attain. And that's the whole idea about the Jainism. You know, and one thing I might add is that Jainism is the art of the living. Whatever we do in the temple, or whatever we interact, or personal life, it should be the same thing. It should be the natural, no matter where we are, whether we are doing the at the professional level we are working, or we are with the family, or we are the friends, or we are in the temple. Idea is the art of the living, practice. The whole message of Mahavir is to practice.
So when you now look at, you know, the events that happened on September 11th and the war that's after that, how do you as a Jain feel, you know, with the idea of ahimsa and non-violence, which is so ingrained in you, how do you react to what's been happening? How do you deal with it as a part of your faith?
Well, as a Jain, you know, I was horrified personally, and, you know, it's totally against what Jains believe in. You know, violence, and, you know, Jainism is all about ahimsa, and as Harendra Bhai said, aparigraha, non-possessiveness, and anekantvad, multiplicity of opinions. You know, people have differences, you know, no doubt about it, but, you know, we have to find other ways to work out our differences, certainly not through this kind of violence. So Jains were horrified, and what we try to do is to help the victims wherever we can, you know, fundraising. We even actually had a car wash where some youth came out to the Jain Bhavan and, you know, washed some cars on a Sunday morning.
One thing I want to add to this is that even we are a strong believer of non-violence. You know, we have the four pillars of the community, a Jain community, Sangha we call community. You know, the householder, male and female, and the monks and the nuns, not supposed to commit any violence. However, in our own infrastructure of Jainism, the householders, when they are attacked, we have a right to defend ourselves. So when America is trying to defend their country, we are fully supportive of it. You know, and Jains have been the soldiers, warriors in the history of Jainism, even though we are, because the whole idea is not to initiate the war, but to defend yourself, to protect yourself, is very much in the infrastructure of the Jainism for the householders.
Okay. Harindra Shah is the chairman of the Jain Center of Northern California's Education Committee. Sunil Vora is the public relations coordinator for the Jain Center of Northern California. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandeep.